Welcome to State of the State, the monthly roundup of policy and research for the state of Michigan, brought to you by the Institute of Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University and the good folks here at WKAR Studios. I'm Arnold Weinfeld, interim director for the Institute, and I'm joined once again by economist Dr. Charlie Ballard, who directs our State of the State survey. Today, we're going to broadly review the results from our fall State of the State survey. And I want to again thank our staff at the Office of Survey Research for their work on this project. So, Charlie, what insights do we have on how Michigan citizens felt about the candidates, their elected officials, and other matters of importance just prior to the election?
Well, we asked about the governor's race, and pleased to say that we called it right. Folks were saying that they preferred Gretchen Whitmer, and she did indeed win. They said they preferred Debbie Stabenow by a narrow margin, and she won by a narrow margin. So this is a pretty good set of results. And in the attorney general's race, they said that it was a dead heat, and it was indeed very close, Dana Nessel just edging out Tom Leonard. So we seemed to have a pretty representative group of people we interviewed. And then we also asked them about how they feel about President Trump and Governor Snyder. And we ask excellent, good, fair, or poor. And what I typically do is combine the excellent and the good into a favorable category. And President Trump's favorables edged up to 34.4%. That's actually the highest that he's had. He's increased very slightly from in the high 20s to the low to mid 30s in the four times that we've taken the pulse during his administration. Those are still below anything that Bill Clinton or Barack Obama ever had and below what George W. Bush had in his first term. So not spectacularly high numbers, but they have not fallen.
Right. But I might say that certainly during the prime election season of September to November, the president was very visible. He was out on the stump in various states across the country supporting Republican candidates, and that visibility might have led to some increased numbers, especially amongst Republican partisans.
Well, he has very strong support among Republicans. Now, on the other hand, he also has high negatives. You know, we said excellent, good, fair, and poor. He has 45% poor, so he has more saying poor than excellent or good. And in fact, his numbers have persistently been fairly polarized with more excellent than Governor Snyder, for instance, has, but also more poor.
Yeah, he certainly seems to be one of those political figures that elicits strong feelings from those that either like him or that don't like him, as you note.
Yes, that's right.
And how did you mentioned a bit about Governor Snyder? How have his numbers wound up here as he closes his term?
Well, he's never had great numbers. He never got as high as 45% in the 8 years that we've been taking the pulse of Michigan's people about how they feel about Rick Snyder. But he bounced around in the mid-30s for and upper 30s for a long time. But then after the Flint water crisis, the last few years, he's been in the lower 30s or upper 20s. And this time, 28.5% favorable, either excellent or good. On the other hand, not as many poor as President Trump. Throughout his entire administration, Governor Snyder has had the most common response has been that bland, middle-of-the-road, fair category. And perhaps, I don't know how he would feel about that, but in fact, since he is a self-described nerd, perhaps that
sort of— That'd be good enough for him, huh?
That middle-of-the-road characterization might be what
right,
he's happy with.
Right. But as you note, he's rebounded a bit since the Flint water crisis.
Well, rebounded some, but this last one he was down a little bit. But really, he didn't tumble. He didn't go down below 20 like Jennifer Granholm did late in her administration. In fact, one of the interesting phenomena that we've seen in the 25 years that we've had this survey in the field, many of our elected leaders, three of them, John Engler, Jennifer Granholm, and George W. Bush, the lowest ratings they ever got were in the last survey before they left office. I guess we in Michigan, we want to kick them in the behind as they go out the door. Rick Snyder, this was not his lowest. It wasn't near his best, right. But it wasn't his lowest.
Right. And of course, we did have that intermediate event of the Flint water crisis that certainly impacted his numbers at that time.
It seems like sort of, even though the numbers bounce around from one survey to another a little bit, it seems to me like the Flint water crisis knocked about 5 or 10 percentage points off of his favorables persistently.
And then what about if we dig into those numbers a little bit, are there differences in attitudes regarding President Trump and Governor Snyder by race or sex or party or religion?
Large differences. And in fact, those differences appear to have grown over time with a very large racial divide. Blacks much less favorable toward the Republicans than whites. Big gender divide, an increasing divide by sex, with women much less favorable toward the Republicans, much more favorable toward the Democrats. And there's a regional, not surprising if you follow Michigan politics, the western side of the state is more favorable toward these Republican office holders than Southeast Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as we also did our usual round of questions regarding how Michigan citizens feel about their financial status, whether they're better off than 1 year ago, how they see the future moving forward. How did those numbers come out this time around?
Fairly similar to what we've had in the last couple of years, which is way better than what we saw in 2009, 2010, not surprisingly. Not as good as what we saw around the turn of the century. You know, the boom of the late 90s, which really lasted in Michigan until 2000, that led to the best numbers that we've ever seen in terms of people's assessment of their financial situation. This time we ticked down a little bit, still well above where we were in 2009 and 2008, but we ticked down to 56% said that their current situation is excellent or good. And then we also asked them, do you think you're going to be better off in a year from now and better off than you were a year ago? 48% said they think they're better off than they were a year ago. Only 20% said worse off, and the rest said about the same. And then in the terms of the question of will you be better off a year from now, 63% said they believe their financial situation will be better a year from now than it currently is. Only 16% said they think they'll be worse.
Right.
Now, whether that'll turn out to be true, well.
Yeah, I mean, is it – do people have blinders on? I mean, you know, you look at I'm a little worried GM's recent announcement – of the plant closings, both here in Michigan and across the country. I was reading an article, a well-done article the other day that was in the Detroit Free Press that dug into those closings and the status of GM. And, you know, the plants that are closing were operating at or below 40% of capacity. There are a number of their plants that are still operating at even less capacity than that. One of them right here in mid-Michigan, the Lansing Grand River plant.
Lansing Grand River plant and the Lake Orion plant over in the north of Detroit, both are, I think, vulnerable. They escaped the chopping block with this set of announcements that came recently. By the way, I should say that our survey, we had finished our interviews just shortly before that GM announcement. So we might have gotten slightly less favorable assessments if we had asked the question a little bit later. But I do think it's an ongoing concern because overall vehicle sales are flat. They rebounded strongly, and that was an engine of growth for the Michigan and the upper Midwest from 2010 through a couple of years ago. Last couple of years, overall sales have been flat, and the composition has been changing with good sales for trucks, SUVs, and crossovers. And if you make a passenger car, as the Lansing Grand River does, it makes the Camaro and a couple of Cadillac models. Those are just not selling. And, of course, from a business perspective, it's very difficult for a company to continue to produce things that are not selling.
Right. As a manufacturer, yeah, I look at those numbers and, you know, there aren't enough jobs overseas in Mexico or China to move back to populate these plants, given the strategies of GM and Ford. To move to more electrical cars, more automated vehicles.
Autonomous vehicles are a big deal.
And certainly seem to be dropping the sedans as well. Now, that said, earlier this summer, at least for the Lansing Grand River plant, GM announced $175 million upgrades.
Right.
Although they're down to one shift, they're going down to one shift right now. It's my understanding that they will be upgrading and retooling that plant for what vehicle we don't know yet, but certainly it seems to me the shifts in manufacturing, the increased use of automation in production are going to continue to impact the labor force over the course of time, and the pace of change is quickening.
Yes, and that's really an extension of a trend that's been going on for decades. You know, I actually personally know people who used to work in auto plants who, you know, their job was to fasten the same four bolts 107 times an hour. Well, nobody does that. All of those have been automated, and so I think we're likely to continue that trend. I would say that currently, if the auto industry in the United States, if it's not currently in a recession, it certainly is in a lull. It's flat. It may even be in what we would call a recession. Now, the rest of the economy is not, at least not for now. I and all economists, I wish that I could forecast with precision where we'll be next year. I don't see an imminent national recession. But there are a variety of headwinds, and those include the tariffs and the ongoing uncertainty about the international situation. China's economy is slowing down, and there's a lot of uncertainty in England, in the United Kingdom with Brexit, and corporate debt has increased, and each of the last three recessions was preceded by an increase in corporate debt. So there's just a lot of concerns, but nothing that says that next month we'll be in a recession. I do think very good chance we will get at least through next summer, maybe even years beyond that, but at least through next summer, which would mean that this would end up being the longest economic expansion in American economic history. And that's got to be a good thing.
It's a good thing, but at the same time, it's also a good thing because I think it gives policymakers here in Michigan, a new governor coming into office, an opportunity to dig into these signs that are out there and that have been out there about an ever-changing economy and ever-changing workplace, and continue the efforts that have been started over the course of time, both at the state level and at the local and regional level, on addressing these workforce development and skill set development, talent development, whatever you want to call it, initiatives moving forward so that whether you're in middle or high school now, going to college or not going to college, or become a laid off worker that needs retraining, there are avenues for you as an individual to be successful in what will be an ever-changing economic scene, I think.
I couldn't agree with you more, Arnold. We have a lot of efforts. We have K through 12. We have universities. Mm-hmm. We expanded the access to early childhood education. I think that's one of the accomplishments of the Snyder administration. And we have various apprenticeships and trainings and stuff. But I just think we're going to have to shift that into an even higher gear because, as you say, mm-hmm. the changing requirements of the workforce. Here's a set of facts that I like to throw out. We're 31st among the 50 states in terms of the fraction of our population who have a bachelor's degree or more. We're 31st among the 50 states in per capita income. Is that a coincidence? No, it's not. The correlation is very strong with the most affluent states, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Maryland, are among the highest ones with the most educated, and the poorest states, Mississippi, Arkansas, West Virginia, are among the least well-educated.
Yeah, there's no question that the next administration, the next legislature is going to have to continue to seek out the best initiatives and strategies that are already being employed in other states across the country to ensure that opportunities exist for educational, for further education for young people, as I noted, whether you're going to college or not. You know, I just like to call it post-secondary education. And again, as I said, for those that get caught in a churn, because it's going to happen, and it's going to happen more quickly over the course of time, I think, that get caught in a churn, continuing skill development. So certainly education, workforce development, talent development, economic development, it's all going to continue to be an important issue for the next administration here in Michigan. Governor-elect Whitmer and her team, as well as the new legislature, to tackle. So that's one certain set of policy implications on the economy. Is there anything else within our survey that we can point to right now? Any kind of social issues that might also have an impact on policymakers moving forward?
Well, we did ask a variety of questions that we've asked from time to time before about issues like would you like a mosque? How would you feel about having a mosque in your community? We asked about gay marriage. That's one where here in Michigan, and I think in an awful lot of places around the country, there has been a sea change. We first asked about gay rights back in 2010. A narrow majority was opposed. Then by 2012, we asked a gay marriage question, and it was favored by 55-39. Now, in this most recent survey, we asked the same question, and it was favored by 61-26. So, of course, I guess it matters less since if 3 years ago the Supreme Court decision in Obergefell v. Hodges and made gay marriage legal. But, of course, you still see 26% opposed to it, even though it is legal. I should note that one of the companion cases to that Supreme Court case was the case of DeBoer v. Snyder, for which one of the lead attorneys was Dana Nessel, now the Attorney General of the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm.
So it would seem as if over the course of time, Michigan residents in particular have adopted a more tolerant attitude towards the lifestyles of individuals, almost a live and let live kind of attitude, so long as people are happy and good citizens, how they live their personal lives is becoming less of an issue to the next door neighbor.
Certainly, what was it, 14 years ago, we had a ballot initiative that a referendum in Michigan that was against gay marriage. Mm-hmm. I don't think that 15 years ago you could have had a ballot initiative for legalizing marijuana, maybe not even 5 years ago.
Right.
There have been changes in those attitudes. Not everyone has changed, but there have been changes.
Not everyone has changed, and some would say that is reflected in the current lame duck session of the Michigan legislature.
Now, you've spent a lot of time in downtown Lansing around the Capitol. What's your sense of what's going on here?
Well, yes, thanks. Thanks for aging me. I appreciate it.
you're just getting warmed up. You're
just
a young fella.
I'm a young fella. Yeah, you know, I've been in and around Lansing, I won't say Lansing, Michigan state politics for 35 years now. And I've been involved as a staff person in lame duck sessions. And let me just say that a lot of what's taking place right now in the lame duck session is not unusual, especially during this era of term limits. You have folks that have been working on bills of personal interest to them, legislation for the time that they've been there, whether it's 6, 8, or even 14 years, if you've had 6 years in the House and 8 years in the Senate. And, you know, this is it. This is your final chance now to wheel and deal and try and get your piece done. Even major policy issues, I would say, like Line 5 and the tunnel, that not uncommon to have pushed through a lame duck session. This time around, too, you know, pet shop bills and tree ordinance bills, you know, whether it's lame duck session or regular session, attacks on home rule have been ongoing for a long time. But again, not unusual to see those types of bills crop up in the last several weeks of a session. However, I think it's certainly in my time, I'm more than happy for any of our listeners to let me know where I'm wrong. I don't recall legislation being taken up in the waning days of the legislature that would seek to limit the authority of the three highest constitutional officers in the state of Michigan, the governor and his or her administration, incoming administration, an incoming attorney general, and incoming secretary of state. And we see that this time around, certainly in the one bill that would state that state rules and regulations can't be any stricter than what the feds do. An important discussion, but one that deserves greater time and deliberation than a lame duck legislature can give to it. And if it was such an important, the perception is if it was such an important discussion, and why wasn't this done during the time frame when there's been full Republican control of the administration, the executive office, and the legislature? The legislation that would take away powers of the Secretary of State to oversee campaign finance. Again, in my mind, this is a legitimate policy issue. The notion being, do you want, at the end of the day, a partisan elected official overseeing campaign finance? We've seen issues.
Big question that came up in the Georgia.
In the Georgia, right?
Gubernatorial election.
So again, a legitimate policy issue to be discussed and deliberated intentionally, not rushed through a lame duck session. And then the last piece that's been running through is would give the legislature a clear path, a much more clearer path to work to be part of lawsuits that would quite possibly oppose the position of the state and the attorney general. So again, not that any of these in and of themselves aren't worthy of a public policy discussion. But I think the perception is that folks are moving these through at a time when they are one party here in Michigan, the Republican Party, is losing control of the entire executive structure, the top executive structure of the state.
But not losing control of the legislature, which might, do you think that's a formula for gridlock in the next few years?
Well, you know, Governor-elect Whitmer is a veteran of the legislature, time in the House, time in the Senate, several years in each, served as a Senate Democratic leader. So she knows her way around. She understands, I think, the mindset of legislators. She's probably got more experience in the legislature coming in as governor than some of the people she'll be negotiating with.
In fact, than almost all of the people
she'll be working
with.
So, I'm hopeful that that will be an asset to moving issues forward. That's a wait and see kind of piece, you know.
We'll find that out.
Yeah,
that might be the subject of one of our podcasts in about 6 or 8 months.
I think so. And we'll certainly be, you know, working our state of the state survey again this coming spring, a few months into the administration and new legislature. So we'll see how how the people of Michigan feel about that. You know, one of the other pieces, you know, that has been criticized is the way the legislature has handled the two ballot initiatives mm-hmm. that were certainly headed for the November election, were then enacted by the legislature, and to no one's surprise, then changed drastically here after the election. And again, the perception is that you're usurping the will of the people. You didn't give them a chance to vote on this, and then you went and changed it for your own purposes and to satisfy your own interests. So so there's going to be some question moving forward, I think, as these approach the governor's desk. Even you were talking about his ratings maybe bumping, certainly bumping up a little bit. What will, at the end of the day, his legacy be? I think that's going to be a question moving into even January.
Rick Snyder has been in office for 7 years and 11 and a half months. And I really think that his legacy, some of it is in place, but a lot of it remains to be determined, because I think there are a lot of analysts who would assess his governorship very differently if he vetoes some of these things that are being bounced around the legislature than if he does not.
You know, and I've maintained that that his legacy is mixed a bit. I mean, you have the Flint water crisis. There's no doubt about that. That will always be a part of his legacy. But this is also a governor who supported several hundred thousand Michigan citizens getting health care. He's established an Office of New Americans and been very good on the issue of immigrants and refugees. But certainly, as with the Flint water crisis, this has become this lame duck session has become one of national interest as
right.
It occurs right next door or across our pond over in Wisconsin.
That's right.
as well. So people are watching.
You know, I want to. I think it's true that 20 years from now, when people say, "Well, Snyder, what was his thing?" Flint is going to come up, and that is that's a negative to his legacy. On the other hand, I want to echo what you said. It took courage to be one of the, I think, only two Republican governors who signed the expansion of Medicaid okay. under the Affordable Care Act, yeah. and as a result, you know, I was saying that. Saying earlier that Michigan, in some important indicators, we rank 31st among the 50 states. Not as high as I'd like. But in terms of the fraction of our population who have health insurance, we're 7th among the 50 states. And I think, who do you have to thank for that? You have Walter Reuther and the UAW, because they established decades ago this long-term trend for Michigan being above the national average. But the other person you have to thank for that is Rick Snyder, because without the Medicaid expansion, which, as you know, only very narrowly passed the legislature, without that, we would be way, way down in the rankings, because we wouldn't have had that 600,000 mm-hmm. Michiganders getting health insurance who didn't have it 4 years ago.
And there are still major issues yet to be addressed with health care. The opioid crisis is still among us. Suicide rates are still increasing. So still issues to be addressed. But I think you're absolutely right. That decision of his to open up Medicaid for Michigan residents certainly has helped along the way. So I think it's safe to say that the last chapter of Rick Snyder's legacy is yet to be written.
Yes.
And it is always the case that 10 or 20 years from now, those chapters may be rewritten as well.
Well, rewriting history is something that people have been doing since Roman times.
Yes,
so
that's
going to continue.
That's right. Well, we'll close this chapter of our State of the State podcast. And we thank you for listening. Join us in the new year on State of the State, and on behalf of Dr. Charlie Ballard and the folks here at WKAR, we wish everyone the best in the coming year. Thank you.